Hello, Steve.
Hello.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are rolling. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Welcome to our meeting, the Public Works Advisory Board on March 16th, 2022. We'd like to have a moment of silence.
Do you want to officially call the meeting to order and state the time, Doug?
Okay, all right. Well, it's 5:31 now. We'll call the meeting to order. Thank you. I think we do have a quorum. There's Ian. Hi, Ian. All right. So the meeting is now officially called to order. And we're going to have a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. I think Ian would probably be a very good person to lead the Pledge of Allegiance.
Okay. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the
United States of America,
and to the republic
for which it stands, one nation under God
indivisible. With liberty
justice for all. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, well, I see we have coming up is any board members' announcements. Which we'll have a chance to add to the agenda later.
If there are no board member announcements, I'd like to pipe up and state that today is very likely our final Zoom only PWAB meeting. Beginning in April, the City Council plans to return to Vets Hall for their meetings, and all commissions and advisory boards, excuse me, will also return to Vets Hall in person. That said, the plan is to have a hybrid option between in person and Zoom. So presumably some PWAB members can attend via Zoom. The public will be able to attend via Zoom, but everyone can also attend in person. This is not 100% official yet, but that is the direction that we have at this time. And that will be confirmed when the agenda packet goes out before the next meeting. I believe the next meeting is anticipated for April 20th. So someone correct me if I'm wrong on that, but that is planned to be again in person with the hybrid model.
Great. Well, Greg, would you like to introduce our new board member?
Actually, we don't have a new board member, but we do have a former board member turned to the dark side. He's now with us on staff. So Eric Riddio, I just want to congratulate him as our new city engineer. Eric comes to us with quite an accomplished background. He's worked in the private sector, overseeing several materials facilities. He has worked as an engineer, a principal engineer for the city of Santa Maria for many years. He is a Cal Poly grad in civil engineering, and then has a master's degree in geotech from Cal State Berkeley, which I heard has like an okay football team. I don't know. But anyway, we are very pleased and excited to have Eric here. He's been a breath of fresh air. He's jumped into projects head first. He's taking a look at our systems and processes. We're just so excited to have him. So thank you, Eric, for being on board. Do you want to say a couple words, Eric?
Yeah, thank you. It's funny, I attended my first PWAB in January, and I did have an inkling I'd be on the other, you know, in this seat at that time, but it wasn't official. I didn't intend, when I applied to be on PWAB, I had no idea I'd end up as the city engineer, but I'm happy to be here. You know, as obviously I was on at PWAB for that short stint, and I am a resident of the city. I care a lot about the city, and I share some of the concerns and some of the excitement with all of you, and I look forward to serving this board, to serving council, to serving the citizens of Morro Bay and bettering our community. My door is always open. I'm giving a short presentation later about pavement management, and my contact info is there. So again, excited to be working with all of you, and thanks for having me.
Great, congratulations. This is wonderful news.
Thank you.
Okay, all right. Thank you for that. Let's see, I guess we'll, do we want to have a little, any public input?
Public comment, yes.
Public comment period. Is there anybody in the queue who'd like to say something?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. All right, so let's move to our consent agenda, and that would involve the approval of the minutes for the January meeting. Do any of the board members have any comments?
Chair Rogers, just a clarification. So the consent agenda, that it does include that item, but it also includes the director's update.
Okay. All right. Well, then we can go ahead and approve the consent agenda.
I apologize. One more thing there. So you could ask for any comments from any of the members of the PWAB, and if there are none, then you can ask for public comment.
Great. Okay. Well, do any of our members have any comments on the minutes or the director's update?
I do. No comments. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any comment from the public?
Thank you, Chair. Again, I do not see any raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Then I think I guess we can approve the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
Well, we'll need a motion.
Okay. Well, Steve Francis would be a very good. How about a motion, Steve?
I move we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Thank you, Ian. Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. So the consent agenda stands. Thank you. So now, let's see, we're on to B, business items. Of course, B1 is the contract with Superior Tank. Do we have any presentation on that?
Yes, Chair. So this is a project that was part of the One Water Plan created by Corolo Engineers and approved by City Council, I believe, in the fall of 2018. As I think I actually gave a presentation to the PWAB in January about the One Water Plan. So this is one of the first four projects to come out of that plan. And presenting for us today is actually one of our lead operators, Dane Lundy. Dane, needless to say, is a shining star in our department and in the utilities division. He's worked for the city for 6 years. He has, I think, around 10 years in the industry. He's worked for Cambria and some other agencies as well. Dane focuses mostly on water supply issues here in the city. If you've ever had a customer service request, he is oftentimes the guy on the ground visiting sites and helping customers out with their water needs. He's also very heavily involved in this project. So he made several recommendations that have helped improve this project, and we want to give him the chance to speak his mind about it. So Dane Lundy, you are up.
Good evening, members.
As Greg said, my name is Dane Lundy. I'm with the City of Morro Bay. I'm one of the lead utility operators, and I have a presentation for you on the water tank rehabilitation improvement amendment to the contract with Superior Tank Solutions. I'll share my screen. And I don't know if everybody can see that.
No.
Okay. It's not sharing.
Share screen. I did. Okay, hit escape. While Dane is figuring that out, I forgot to mention that Dane is born and raised in the city of Morro Bay. So he not only knows the community very well, but he also knows our water systems like the back of his hand. So if you have any questions ever, please feel free to reach out to him. All right, Dane, looks like you got it up.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, thank you. So this is on the water tank rehabilitation improvement amendment with a contract with Superior Tank Solutions for our Blanca and King's Tanks rehabilitation project. So we started with a budgeted amount of just under $2.7 million. Our original cost was just over $2 million with Superior Tank, just under $60,000 with Cannon & Associates, bringing our total contract to just under $2.1 million. This amendment includes a factory refurbishing for the Blanca tanks 3 and 4 at $145,000, two tank mixers for the King's tanks at $34,000, some additional couplings for water level and quality monitoring at $4,000, the Ridgeway tank maintenance contract just under $30,000, the Elena tanks washout and patch repair at $11,000 with $100,000 contingency. It also includes some additional anticipated project costs of engineering services, some electrical for the tank mixers, some coating special inspection stuff, and some construction management for another $215,000. So estimated additional project cost is $541,000. At completion, the estimated cost would be just under $2.7 million with a basically $53,000 left in the budget for till completion. On the first slide, we show the Blanca tanks, and we're talking about doing a factory rehab for the two tanks in back, the bolted tanks, indicated by the red arrows here. It was determined that the factory rehab was the most cost-effective way to approach these tanks for improving tank protection. The front two tanks, the welded steel tanks, would just be blasted and painted. This is for the tank couplings. So we decided to add pressure gauges to these tanks for a redundant level indicator. It's a lot cheaper than the level indicators we had before. And we're also adding a couple of couplings to the back sides of the tanks to be able to put sample taps to maintain a full tank water quality so we can check our residuals, do a little bit more accurate job of that. Next slide is the Ridgeway tank maintenance contract. So originally this tank was not included in the 10-year asset management program. This tank's in relatively good shape. We did decide that it was a good idea to add this to the asset management program to kind of keep the quality of this tank up so we don't have to put a lot of money into this tank down the road. So this slide is for the Elena tanks washout and spot repair. So these tanks are scheduled to be torn down as part of the Nutmeg tank project. However, we need to extend the life of them a little bit. So we're looking at doing a washout and a spot repair on these tanks to kind of just give them a little bit more life and keep them going until we do the Nutmeg tank project. In conclusion, the City Council approved this amendment at the March 8th, 2022 council meeting. This amendment will provide the requested repairs and improvements to the city water storage tanks. These modifications will extend the life of these critical of the this critical water system facilities, improve operability, and better protect public health by enhancing water quality in the distribution system. So that pretty much concludes the slides. If anybody has any questions.
Thank you, Dane, for that. Are there any questions from the PWAB on this?
I had just a quick question. Like, for instance, like the couplings and the pressure regulators, those types of things that you know, that are going to install, is that something that the company is going to be installing, or is that something that the city is going to be installing?
So we're going to have the company, STS, weld on some 3,000-pound couplings. They would have 3/4-inch female threaded holes in them, basically. Then we will purchase the gauges ourselves and the sample taps to make sure we get the quality we want, and then install them before the tanks are full again.
Okay, cool.
I've got a question. In Amendment 1, we added a contingency of $100,000 or so. In the original contract, was there also a contingency factor put in, or was that not included in the original contract?
I could take that question. So the original contract, I do believe we came through PWAB first, and we may have included the contingency for PWAB's review. But when it went to City Council, City Council opted to remove that contingency. And our city engineer at the time felt that we probably wouldn't need it. And so that was okay, even though that's non-standard generally for public contracts. So we didn't have a contingency built in. But yes, we did add it for this one as we saw that there were some unforeseen needs. In the original contract that we wanted to make sure we could handle with quick responsiveness without having to go back to City Council again.
Okay, thank you.
It looks like there's no other questions. Go ahead.
I have a question, sorry. On the King's tanks, I saw there was a big air compressor they were hauling away today, and I've heard, I can hear it from where I live, and I was just kind of curious, what are they doing? Are they just cleaning these tanks, or are they doing something on the inside to coat them with a new coating? Or I guess I'm not real clear on exactly what they're doing to those tanks.
They're basically doing everything that you just said. They are cleaning the tanks. They're sandblasting them. Okay. They are recoating them. They are fixing any holes that they found with welding plates on there. What you saw being towed out today was actually a generator. It was a rented generator. They're running dehumidification equipment at night, which is kind of probably what you're hearing up there.
Yeah.
They had a DEFCO go out on one of their generators. So they towed one out and brought a new one in, I believe it's already arrived.
Okay. So that the Blanca and Kings are basically the same sets of tanks. Is that right?
No, Kings is on the south end of town, and the Blanca tanks are the four on the north end of town.
Ah, I see. I live near the Kings tanks, so that's where I hear all the action.
Yeah, it is a little bit. I was up there really late last night checking on some stuff. It is noisy up there right now.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to add that typically we would bring these sorts of change orders in front of PWAB before it goes to council. It's always a balance we try to play, because we already have a contractor out there working, and in times like these, we need to change order out there quickly so that we can direct course on the project. So we have to get city council approval. So we did that first this time, but we wanted to make sure that we still brought it for PWAB's review. So. I thank you, Dane, so much for the presentation. I'll get back to the chair.
Thank you. Okay, so we don't really need to take an action on that at all.
No, but we'll take public comment.
Okay, is there anybody in the queue who'd like to comment on that, please?
Thank you, Chair. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Okay, well then let's move on to B2, which is the paving management program update. And I guess we're going to get a presentation.
Yes, thank you again, Chair. So we do have our our new city engineer, Eric Riddio, former PWAB member. Again, we'd just like to thank him on this work. He's picked up this project. This project actually has been in development for almost 2 years. It was put on hold due to the pandemic, and it's passed through a few hands since then. So Eric is kind of picking up some pieces here, and we're glad to have him on board, especially given his extensive background in pavement management. So,
wow.
Eric, presentation's yours.
Great. Thanks, everyone. Again, yeah, happy to be here. And for the last week and a half, I've had a nice exposure to a lot of the different projects. And, you know, pavement, I have quite a bit of experience. I did a lot with the city of Santa Maria. So it's a struggle for all agencies alike, funding, even with gas tax, even with the different funding sources. So I'm just gonna present some things for you. You know, our current project that's we're looking at putting out to bid soon, but looking at kind of the future and some of the things we're gonna do collectively as a department to look at tackling some of the pavement concerns we have. So, and feel free during the presentation at any point, if you have questions, we don't have to wait until the end, but feel free to interject. And it can be a conversation if you like, so.
I do have a question. Do you have a list of the streets for this year or whenever you're gonna be awarding them?
I do. When I get to the, there's a slide that talks about this year's project. I'll share with you the streets that are going to be part of that project. Are you able to see the full screen version on this, or is it a?
Yeah, you have to switch it.
Switch it. All right. Is that better?
Yes.
All right. So I have few things I was going to discuss. First of all, you may have had prior updates on pavement and some background on it, but I kind of have a few slides just to go over what I'm calling pavement 101, some basic concepts about pavement management. Also talk about PCI or pavement condition index, which is how we rate pavements. It's a numerical system, 0 to 100, that was developed by the U.S. Army Corps years ago. We'll talk through the actual pavement ratings for the city. The last time they were rated was back in 2020. So we need to look at actually getting a program back in place for that. And the ratings that we do have are projected or estimated, so I'll share those with you. Treatment costs and budget scenarios, looking at our current budget, what we can project the PCI to be, and if we were to bring more funding to the table. Our 2022 and 2023 pavement management projects. And then lastly, some strategies that some of the things I've learned, and then also talking with our streets crew this week, with Greg, with others, maybe some things we can look at doing to try and help improve our pavements collectively. So pavement 101, first I just want to start with, it's all about applying the right treatment to the right pavement at the right time using the right materials. Now, that's easier said than done when you have a big budget and you have an elaborate program and you can do that. It's really the best way to do it. sometimes you can't catch pavements at the critical time, but that's why we have tools like StreetSaver to try and give us an idea when we can do that. And so I'll talk to that in just a couple slides. I don't know if folks have seen pavement deterioration, what it looks like if you were to represent it by a curve, but this is assuming you have a brand new pavement at a PCI of 100. It takes, you know, when it's brand new, it takes a little bit of time to start to deteriorate, but really there's a point of inflection right at about just below 70, where the environmental and loading failure mechanisms really accelerate deterioration. So once you get down into this area and it gets into a poor condition, it's a lot harder to catch up. So, which is a situation where we are with the city of Morro Bay. We're at about 62 right now as far as PCI. So we're really at a critical point in the curve.
Is that kind of an average, Eric?
Yeah, that's a collective average for the whole network. And I'll break it down by functional classification of
okay.
different types of streets.
Thank you.
Generally speaking, when you're looking at pavement deterioration, the type of treatments you want to do along the curve, this is not, this isn't, I wouldn't say this is what every agency does, but in general, this is what you would do, like some type of surface treatment. Well, first you have a crack seal, then you look at some type of slurry or microsurfacing, followed by a chip seal, which is a little more aggressive. It has a bigger aggregate source that you're applying. And then when you get down below 50, you're looking at overlays more, you know, you're actually grinding down and milling and actually overlaying the asphalt with a new layer of, you know, a couple inches of asphalt. And then, of course, if you get really bad, you have to go in and reconstruct or look at other types of treatments, some more, and I'll go into those a little bit later, something like a full depth reclamation and cold in place recycle, some of those more costly treatments. But yeah, we never want to see pavements go get down into here, but if you were to see a pavement just run its course, the lifespan is, you know, 25 to 30 years, of course, if you don't do any treatment. But the idea is that you get it down into like 70 and then you do a surface treatment, you bring it back up here and you just kind of cycle it before it hits this really critical point on the curve.
I had a quick question. Kind of exactly what you were saying, like obviously reconstructing it kind of puts it back up to 100. Typically, like for an overlay, like how far up the ladder does that take it? You know what I mean? As opposed to like slurry and chip seal, does that bring it, you know, into the 80s to 100, or is that just kind of improving it, you know, putting a Band-Aid on it kind of thing?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really depends on the structure of the roadway. So yeah, I'll discuss that a little bit as well, but if you overlay something that's structurally inadequate,
yeah,
like you said, it may be 100, you know, if you rate it right after, you know, day after you pave it, but after 2 months, it might start reflecting some of that cracking. So that's why you really have to look at pavements and have them analyzed. If you're going to do an overlay,
street and by the location.
Yes, and you need to, when you're looking at overlays, you should ideally do coring, you know, look at your soils, look at your entire hot mix profile, and spend the money to do the testing so that you know that it's going to last. It doesn't make sense to do an overlay over something that structurally is inadequate, because it'll continue to have the same issues. So that's a great question. These are the critical points we're talking about, you know, where it gets, it kind of crashes over into the next threshold where you want to catch it. So that's what I had discussed earlier as far as, catching it before it goes to the next costly treatment. So the sun and water, the environment, as well as loading of vehicles are the ways, things that impact the pavements. Some things we can control. If we didn't have, the sun oxidizes the surface, it starts the oil kind of will start to evaporate, you'll start cracking, with temperature, it expands, contracts, that's when cracks start developing. But as well, vehicle loading is probably the worst thing for our pavements. I live in Morro Bay. I live on one of the North Morro Bay streets. Those streets were never designed for three garbage trucks a week, I can tell you that. So you can see here, and this, the common unit here, one vehicle unit, if we just say it's this was done by pavement engineering consultant that the city uses. If anyone remembers a Chevy S10 Blazer, an old SUV, I don't think they make anymore. But if that's one vehicle unit, when one of those drives by your house, if a garbage truck were to drive by, it'd be like 9,343 of those same, going by. So that's really? That's what the impact of heavy vehicles does to our roads. Especially, big trucks, and with all the amount of deliveries, freight going up and down these streets, it's really showing why the underlying structure of the roads is failing. This is just a good visual of the pavement structure. You've got your pavement thickness, and then you've got your base, or what we're calling an aggregate base layer, and then you've got your underlying soil. So R value is something we use to characterize the type of soil. It's really kind of characterizes how strong that soil is in a structural context. In Morro Bay, we kind of have a mix of soils. I will become more familiar with them as we do some coring and look at them, but areas where you have more fines, like more clays in the soil, those R values are here on the lower side. They can be as low as 5, probably closer to 25. But just to give you perspective, traffic index is how we design roads according to the highway design manual. In residential, it's probably 5 to 6 is our TI. For a TI of 7, you really need for a soil that's about in the middle of the road, you need like 11 inches of base with 4 inches of asphalt. And I don't know if anyone's seen areas that are failed in their neighborhood, but sometimes you see that asphalt, you can see the native soil run right underneath some of these older streets. So structure is a big concern when it comes to heavy loading, the vehicle loading of our asphalt, especially with truck traffic.
So. Can I interject a little bit? On the north side of town, we've got a silt basically for about 2 feet, and then we've got a fat clay underneath there. The clay is not too weak, but the silt is not worth much. And the description we had was the roads were built for an army base during World War II and meant to last about 3 years. And so we've been nursing them along for, 70 years? So wow. We're lucky to have anything.
Yeah. No, I'd love to hear more from you guys on, those who've been here a while and know some of the history of the roads, because it definitely, is showing, every season. I mean, we haven't had too much rain this season, so it's it's probably given us this false sense of, oh, the roads, yeah, they're still bad, but I think if we had a normal rain year, we'd have a lot more problems out there.
Well, and I do believe that there is like very minimal amount of class two or class three base. It's pretty much all red rock from, you know, the rock that they crushed and hauled around. So right. Pretty much most of the streets, especially the older streets, are made from what the Morrow Rock's made of.
Yeah.
You know, the parking area down there. So, you know, that's
actually, it's not as good as Morrow Rock. This was stuff from cheaper stuff they found to bring in. Morrow Rock is pretty much a granite, so it's pretty good quality material, not compared to what they brought in.
But I mean, there's just not class two certified road base, you know, is in all new, you know, builds these days.
Yes. Yeah, I've heard in some cases they just did a chip seal, right? Or a chip seal or a slurry seal right on top of that red rock you're speaking of. So it's quite a challenge to overcome. You really have to go back and start fresh to, you know.
They used to call it oil and screenings. And that's right. What counties did for 100 years.
Yeah. So there's, you know, pictorially some of the distresses, the different types of cracking. We have weathering on this side where you start to see the aggregate, the fines wash away, and then the different types of cracking. I think this is probably pretty common to a lot of you. You see in, at least in North Morro Bay, we see a lot of this alligator cracking. It's just widespread. And, you know, when you go to do repairs on this, I talked to the street guys, where do you stop? I mean, it's just, but again, you know, that's why we're responding to the worst and taking care of, you know, potholed areas. I think one of the things we're trying to develop is a strategy going forward. How do we address these type of situations with the limited funding that we have? Some of the other distresses are patches and utility cuts, which are never, whenever you're cutting into your road, it's not ideal. So trying to find ways to coordinate utility projects with road projects, rutting and depressions as well. PCI, Pavement Condition Index, which some of you may already be familiar with, but this is kind of how we break it down for the city as far as a rating system. We are here, as I mentioned, 62. We're in the fair, and I added at risk just to bring attention to that. I think, if I haven't talked to Greg, but at some point we probably will be talking to council about this, but they need to know we're in this really critical area where if we don't find some extra funding, getting down in the poor, the cost, as I said, as I showed you in this, I had a slide, I'm sorry, that shows dollar figures. If you have $1 figure here and you add a dollar, it just increases in magnitude as you get further down in the PCI. So we got a PCI 100, and then that's a 28 there. So just to give you an idea of what it looks like. Maybe go home tonight while it's still light and go out and see if you can estimate the PCI of your road. And I have a list of, at least from 2020, of what each street is. And if you're curious to know what it was rated at, let me know. So yeah, this is, we have the ratings from 2020 here. So just in 2 years, we've gone down 4 points in PCI. Now this is, we haven't re-rated, which is something, I strongly recommend that we do. We need to have a consultant come and do at least annual, at least part of the city. Maybe we don't do the whole city every year because it is costly, but at least maybe we do half, we do quadrants of the city. So we're at least rating a part of the city so that we know that the 62 is accurate. This is from Street Saver, and Street Saver is one of the tools we use. It's a computer program that it uses a lot of the data based on the treatments you have, based on the, you know, it does all the calculations to best predict how your pavements are performing over time. And you put in your treatments, you put in everything that you do to your pavements, and it adjusts the PCI based on that. And then every time you do a rating, you also, you input that and it'll bring it back to your current rating. So we're gonna use this program a lot more going forward to help make us help us make decisions on how to treat these pavements going forward. So the breakdown by percentage, you know, as you would expect in Morro Bay here, it's over 50% residential, and that's where that's where we've seen not as much of a decrease as our collectors, but you could see we're losing the battle. We need to look hard at this and see what we can do. So that's the condition category breakdown. There we are at fair. 44% of the total is in the fair category. So this is where we're at risk and at a critical point. This is a picture that shows by color this where the street's at. So red being the worst, orange being poor, and then yellow and going up. So North Morro Bay here, you can see there's a lot of orange. There's a little bit in this area as well, not as much in the core of Morro Bay. But we need to take care of the roads that we have in good shape here through a surface seal program so we don't get them down into these areas. If we look at the cost, this was done. I need to look at this to make sure we're still, a lot has changed in 2 years when this was updated. So as you know, costs of materials, costs of labor, all that has gone up. So it could be that we're off by a bit as far as costs here per square yard. But just to kind of give you perspective on the magnitude of cost, if we're looking at a light maintenance, which may be a slurry seal, a reconstruct, is 30 times. So that's when you hear, and this is one of the things, one of the complaints I've field all the time is, well, why are you sealing that road? This road's worse. This one's falling apart. Why are you doing that? Well, it's $7.40 to maintain that good road to keep it in good shape. I don't have $210 per square yard, and I'll get into the budget in just a minute to kind of tell you what we have and what we're able to do. This slide shows different budget scenarios. So if we wanted to keep a 66, which we don't have anymore, if we're going back to 2020, we would then need to be spending $2 million a year to keep it there.
Wow.
Our current budget, which we have $700,000, I think we have some additional monies with, since Measure Q is after the ratings were implemented, I believe, or has been passed since then. But we have some additional money on top of this for this project coming up. But we're here. It's pretty close. I think we're further down than we expected to be. But you can see the trajectory. Trajectory is not good for the current budget. Of course, if you don't spend any money, you plummet even more. But if we want to increase, we really have to throw a lot of money at it. some one-time costs. Maybe, you know, I'm hoping that some of these bills that are going through, maybe there's some one-time money that'll come through for pavement projects. I don't know. I think the states and all the folks are still figuring out how that trickles down to the local agencies. But I would hope that we have some one-time money we can throw at some of these streets that are in poor condition that we just can't afford to if you think about it, you know, we could probably fix one or two streets and that would be our entire budget for 1 or 2 years. Or we do a surface seal project, or we do a dig out project that spans many, you know, center line miles of streets. So it's one of the challenges we have in pavement management. So what is our project that's in process? I've been reviewing it and I'm gonna share with you the different streets we're looking at, but it's called our arterial dig out hotspot repair project. It's focused on some of the arterials where we have some failures in the mainly in the wheel pass due to the heavy loading of heavy vehicles. As you would expect, arterials, you know, they're wider streets, they're more lanes, they're a deeper structural section, they're more costly to maintain. So we don't want those to get down into a poor category. So if there's ways we can reduce the failures and surface seal them, that's kind of where we're headed with that project, is we're gonna do some dig outs and then do a surface seal to try and keep it from deteriorating further.
Are any of these areas already kind of factored in with the water reclamation, you know, project as far as being repaired as they're paved back, or is that still come from this budget?
I could take that one. So that's actually something that Eric and I are going to be looking at. At first blush, we believe we may be able to charge repairs on Quintana to the project. There's obvious advantages to that. That funding would be essentially loan funding that can be, you know, paid over the next 30 years at a very favorable interest rate. And it is directly related to the project. So it's something that, you know, we would hope to apply to the project. That's still an unknown. I will say initially we believe that we can do kind of a seal on Quintana, on Northern Quintana, but seeing as what's going on Southern Quintana, that just will not be sufficient. That road needs some serious repair. And that's going to be expensive because that's a long stretch. And so it is just, if you go back to what Eric was showing about our average budget for pavement management, not counting the past 2 years where we did nothing, but just average on the years that we do pavement management is 700,000, 800,000, maybe 900. This year we have closer to 1.1 million, but that's a big year for us. I mean, that to repair Quintana, we wouldn't be able to do much else if that money would even cover Quintana. So, you know, ideally we do want to apply that to the project. That's something we still need to analyze though.
The way it was described to me when we were doing this sewer plant, the pavement repairs was going to be part of the sewer plant and not part of the general budget. Has that changed?
I'm hopeful of that. I mean, you're talking.
Who would change it?
You're talking to two guys who are taking a fresh look at it. So I'm not saying it's changed. I'm just saying that I don't know that for sure. So that's something we need to confirm.
Well, it's eligible for sewer district or sewer funding to repair it, and I don't know where you're going to find the money to repair those roads after the heavy equipment are done with them, unless you charge it off to the sewer treatment plant. And there was a budget in there for it, I thought.
I kind of think it makes a lot of sense to, you know, if we have that available funding to try to get that to improve those roads correctly, instead of just kind of keep chasing our tail on those areas for the next 10 years of trying to, you know, improve, you know, basically put band-aids on them, where if we have that low interest money available, we do it right and pave it to get it back up to 100. But
yeah. And the other thing, which I've been talking to anyone who will talk to me about it, was when we redo the garbage contract, and what date, when does that get renegotiated?
It's currently in negotiations.
Are we including a pavement repair cost within that estimated garbage contract? Because, I mean, the wear we're seeing in the road is almost entirely due to the garbage trucks.
Janine, can you speak to whether or not we have pavement repair included in the negotiations that we're in the middle of right now? And I see we have Lori's hand up too, Doug, just put that on your radar. Janine, are you there?
I'm here. I was trying to get into the microphone to turn on. So we have in the hauler agreement, there is a franchise fee that's 10%. And so part of that has always been utilized, or could be utilized, as it goes into the general fund and then is doled out. But the intent with that, some of that is for that pavement, kind of for the pavement issues that are caused by the trucks.
How much is that 10%?
That is something that gets submitted to finance. I think it is something in the $370,000 range per year, but that's something I'd have to look up to get a more accurate number.
So it's 1/10 of what we need to repair for the damage that the garbage trucks are doing. Is that right?
Well, I don't know what percentage that the garbage trucks are damaging the streets and then translating that.
When we were doing this stuff before 7 years, 5 years ago, it was $3 million. We would be able to keep the roads up around 70%. And since if 90% of that damage is caused by the garbage trucks, basically it's $3 million a year we need from the franchise fees in order to maintain the roads and fix the damages the trucks are doing.
Well, I think that's good feedback and input for us, so we can certainly take a look at that as we're in the middle of these negotiations. And I also do appreciate the feedback from both advisory board members, Gaffney and Irwin's, in really urging us to apply the Quintana repairs to the wharf project. So I'll take that back as well. And as I said, that's something that Eric and I are actively looking into.
I have a question.
And then the other joke I've got is we're going to wait for a fire truck to fall into a pothole.
Okay, so Laurie, I think you have your hand up. Do you want to go ahead and ask your question?
I have just two things. One is just a point of procedure. At least from my perspective on the Zoom call, there are times when I'm not clear who's speaking. So if people want to go and identify themselves before they ask questions of the main speaker, I think that would be helpful for me and maybe for any members of the public that are with us today. And then I do have a question that goes back a couple slides, but I wasn't sure if I should hold that till Leander mentioned that now.
Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I didn't necessarily want to backtrack, but the graph that shows the expenditures, that one. So my question about this is, I assume this is based on some sort of modeling you've done, and if you run that out past the 5 years and take it like to 10, 15, 20 years, I'd be interested to see, because logically or presumably the green would trend way down after some amount of time. So I would certainly be interested in not just showing the expense of catching up, but also showing the benefit over time of doing that. So that's, I guess, a question and potentially a suggestion. That's all, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I can get with the consultant, see if we can get something that's a little bit further out. The one thing I will point out is that this one talks about having a one time as well as a yearly. So, as you mentioned, once the one time goes away, yes, this will flatten out a bit. This obviously seems it can't be achieved with any type of situation other than incredible amount of funding, but we couldn't sustain the yearly average anyway, even if we were to spend a huge amount to bring every street up to this. So it's really, you know, yes, there's one-time costs, but really you have to look at, you know, this curve here, this is the key. What we need to be spending on a year to year just to keep steady, even if you got up here, that's a pretty close average to, you know, for agency of our size and centerline miles, which we have about 55, it's about $2 million a year that we need to maintain that asset.
Sure, no, that completely makes sense. I just feel like it might be helpful to illustrate how that plays out just a little further over time, especially looking down where we are with the current budget and the implications of remaining there.
Hey, Eric, I'd like to hear a comment on Quintana. I assume that the southern end of Quintana is from the oval down to the Main Street. And of course they cut right through the pavement, and now it's been paved over and it's almost flat, not quite. Could you just comment on what is the condition of that road now with what they've done? I guess I'm not real clear on where is Quintana on this chart.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the current PCI or what it was rated before and where it is now. Mm-hmm. You know, that the best way to do is have it rated, but I don't know if the patch back that's been put on Quintana is final. I don't think it is. I think there's probably part of any big project of this magnitude is they'll wait until kind of the end and do a punch as part of a punch list, you know, final paving, mm-hmm. Whether it's just the trenches themselves or a restoration pavement, you know, if that's part of the process. But a lot of what you're seeing out there is temporary paving, just, you know, to cover it up. They may have to go back and access it at some point, so they don't want to put the, you know, the compactive effort to have to, you know, demo it out. It's a lot of cold patch that's easily removed for construction type instances. So
okay, all right, well, good. And by the way, I'm Doug, and I just, you know, I think what John said earlier about trying to get this incorporated into the plant project, of course I'm sure that's one of your objectives, and we'd like to hear more about that when the time comes.
Yeah, it certainly would be a great, you know, accomplishment to do that. I think, you know, the pipelines are very long. Quintana, we've got Tascadero, we've got parts of Main Street. So yeah, it's significant arterials that we've been touching with the project, and we'll take a look at that.
This is John. One of the questions I have in my head was, I know that Grover Beach did that pavement bond, was it 4 years ago now, maybe five? How's that going for them?
I don't know. I can certainly reach out and find out for a future meeting if you'd like. I do recall hearing about that project. I'm not sure where they are, where they were PCI, but and I know it was quite a struggle for them for a time.
I think they were better than we were.
Did you say better?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's you know, and I don't know if their target was residential or arterials or a collection of both, but one of the other issues with the more aggressive treatments that you have to keep in mind, you no longer can do a surface, you know, when you can't do a surface seal, which is considered a maintenance treatment, when you have to do an overlay or even a microsurface, which is, it's essentially a more aggressive surface seal, you have to bring all of your concrete, you know, infrastructure, sidewalks, and your up to ADA, current ADA, which would be any curb ramps. So that's added cost that you have to throw at these projects. If they get, you know, to where they're, you can't do a surface seal, then you're not only looking at additional pavement costs, but you're having to do all the concrete as well, which ultimately we want to be upgrading all of our concrete facilities for ADA. But again, it's a funding issue that we, you know, as we get funds, we do concrete projects, and we will be with this project, but that's coming up. But you just don't have the budget to take care of it all, similar to the pavement.
This is Ian. I just wanted to comment one more thing. Has anybody looked into alternative pavement options for sidewalks, for streets, for anything like that, like something more sustainable? I won't like say what I'm thinking, but everybody might know pavers, you know, me being a paver contractor. Has any of that discussion been brought up, or do we know?
I can maybe jump in on that one. I've been here 10 months. I have not heard that discussed. Eric's been here, I think, less than 10 days. It's certainly not anything we've talked about, but certainly we can look into alternatives. We can also look at concrete and things like that. And so that I think that's very good feedback.
Yeah, I don't have any experience personally with pavers. Asphalt, you know, it's the most common because it's versatile. It's a lot easier to place. And then when you do any type of utility work, it's the easiest to reestablish as far as getting, you know, sure, reestablishing trenches and having a cohesive surface. So, well, but yeah, you have, I mean, the deterioration, as you know, concrete is by far a better material for durability wise, but,
And to just kind of touch on that, for instance, like with pavers, you know, they are a flexible road system just like asphalt, so they work the same way. And the 30-year lifespan of a paver compared to asphalt and concrete, you would have to replace or repair 3%. So, you know, the cost analysis is, you know, is much, you know, it's much more expensive, obviously, initially. But the, you know, I mean, you can see what 30 years does on the graph of asphalt. You know, obviously, I'm not saying we should paver every street in Morro Bay, but maybe it's something to look at as far as like, you know, some of kind of our main thoroughfares that, you know, Morro Bay Boulevard or portions of Main Street or the Embarcadero, sections like that, that we could remove from the, you know, the general pavement plan going forward in the future, long term. That's just a suggestion to think about.
It definitely brings a unique look as well. You know, I think it's a culture change that, you know, hasn't been embraced by the industry. I think, you know, there's certainly, like you said, some, I mean, as far as when pavers settle, when there's movement, you can go in and just repair their pavers that need to be repaired. It's just getting the training and the folks to do it, which is teachable. It's just really, okay, you know, the asphalt has been entrenched and it's been kind of the road solution for so long that, but yeah, I hear you. It's definitely, I'd be interested in looking more at it.
The other thing which Rob and I had talked about was when they did that payment management plan, and we started doing some of the more aggressive tape seals and things like that to see how, just looking at my road, it started out about a 60 and made it up to about, say, a 75. and with just the cape ceiling over here on the north side. And it's standing up reasonably well. It might be a 68, 60 right now, maybe a 70, but it's the biggest problem it's been having is when you get the rain and the sand gets washed out and then it comes apart a little bit. It could use a little sealing, but Rob was looking at to see what alternatives we could do other than, you know, a complete rebuild out of a road and right. Some of the costs involved with that. And I don't know if he shared that information with you or if he had any discussions with the pavement consultant about kind of incorporating some of the things that we were having to do and just to get by
seven years ago. I haven't spoken to Rob about it, but I am aware of the different treatments, and I think that's certainly something we will look at as part of our tool belt. Mm-hmm. You know, the different triple capes and, you know, establishing that structure. You know, if you don't have the structure underneath, seeing if you can get it on top and with something a little bit more flexible that doesn't reflect the cracking. So, but it really has to be done on the right road, you know, mm-hmm. the right time. So, yeah, you're right.
Okay, I see Robert's got his hand up. Go ahead, Robert.
Lori may have gotten hers up first, but I think I'll be quick. I was just curious about some of the detour routes with the water project going on. They've been taking a little more abuse. I'm wondering if that's going to be reflected in the study, all of these alternative routes that people have been driving. I walk them and drive them a lot myself and notice some real wear and tear out there on some of these routes through neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's certainly something I made a note that I think we should probably discuss. I'll discuss with Greg. Look at the roundabout. You know, all the Los Osos traffic is going around the roundabout. So yeah, you're right. It is taking. It's turning. You know, Quintana probably prior to this project wasn't really experiencing arterial type traffic, but it certainly is now. So you're definitely. Right on that.
Okay, good point. Okay, Lori, go ahead.
Oh, thanks. So I had Ian's comment made me think of something I was curious about, but are we actually going over the updates on the agenda, or are those just informational? Because my question has to do with the update regarding the berms. Should I go ahead with that, or were we going to actually discuss those?
The berms, I'm not familiar with what you're referring to.
In the updates, maintenance and operations, it talks about repairing the asphalt berms around town for stormwater flow. There's just a little update on that I had a question about.
We don't have anyone from maintenance here tonight, but certainly you can ask, you can go ahead and ask a question and I'll try to address.
Okay, yeah, I apologize for my confusion because I think at one point we sort of walked through the updates and then I think Greg, that you suggested sort of shortening that up. So that's why I wasn't clear. Well, since we were talking about asphalt and then again, following on the thought of should we be exploring alternatives, which seems like a reasonable idea, when I noticed the little blurb about working on replacing berms with asphalt, I wanted to ask if other alternatives have been or, you know, could be considered, such as bioswales and LID type alternatives that would provide for more infiltration and help control our runoff issues into the estuary in terms of water quality.
Yeah, so again, currently that's not something that I've heard talked about in our department, but certainly something we could take a look at. And I think now that Eric's here, we'll be taking a fresh look at a lot of these things. So we can look at bioswales. I have some experience with bioswales from another city. I'm not sure about you, Eric, but I know there are going to be some constraints with that. We do part of our water conveyance system, right, over the streets is these berms. And so if, you know, I'm not sure if a biospill would stand up to it in all cases, but there may be some areas of opportunity there. So that's good feedback for us. And we can take that back and do an analysis there.
Oh, that's great. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, I'll just add that, you know, those, there are potentially grant opportunities for that with the, whether it be the water board or to look at solutions that maybe could, we could pursue. Usually in the right of, it really depends on how much right of way the city has and then whether we can, you know, it may involve acquiring right of way to accommodate some of those features, but I think it's, you know, the more you hear about some of our, you know, projects out there, you know, even projects we're pursuing, like active transportation type projects that I think the city has gone after and maybe will, you know, will continue to pursue, but looking at ways to integrate those type of features, the LID features, you know, when you add a class four bikeway, you have its separation with some kind of LID to deal with the stormwater. And I think those are definitely great options to reduce the amount of pavement you have to maintain.
Thank you very much, Eric.
No problem. Thank you for the questions. I'm just going to finish up with two more slides. This is this year's project, the one we've been talking about, the arterial digout hotspot, and it's really focusing on Main Street from the 41 all the way to the State Park, Harbor Street, and then Pacific Street, and then also South Babe, although we want to maybe look at portions of South Bay because of the wharf and timing this. We obviously we don't want to do any improvements to South Bay that continue to have you know, work with the wharf project, so we want to be sensitive to that. But what I mean by arterial dig out is looking at the failed areas, and here's a picture kind of showing Highway 41 at Main Street. You know, if you drive through there, I'm sure you do on a certainly weekly basis. We've identified areas that are failed due to the heavy loading of traffic. We're going to be completely digging out the section and replacing with what you see here, 6 inches of hot mix asphalt, which is kind of is considered like a deep lift of asphalt in these areas that are probably the existing HMA isn't near that. It's probably 3 to 4 inches. I'm guessing. I don't know. I don't have any coring data, but this is, you can either go back and replace with base material or just do a thicker section of asphalt. And replacing with a thicker section of asphalt is by far a faster treatment. It may, you know, as far as material cost, obviously asphalt is a higher cost, but the mobilization of equipment and everything, you basically going in here and grinding these areas out and compacting and then placing asphalt. So you have a little bit less disruption to traffic. And but this is a big project. I mean, there's a lot of areas all along Main Street through town. Some areas are better than others, but is there one of our main arterials? We need to what's been referred to, do a stopgap or stop the continued failures from happening in these areas, and then do a surface seal over it to reestablish that surface. So that's the project we're hoping to get out in the next month or so. Again, I'm getting my arms around it now, looking at the scope, the plans, seeing where we're at with the plan spec and the estimates, and seeing what we need to do to accelerate getting this project out to bid. I did mention, I think on this slide, possibly a surface seal project. I don't know if funding will permit, but I think that's our next kind of priority, is looking at some of these streets that are in that good area before they fall further on the curve, and looking at doing a surface seal, because you can treat so much more and keep those in good shape before they fall, you know, into the next category. So I'll be taking a hard look with our streets group at Street Saver and seeing which ones we can put into our next surface seal project. So in conclusion, some of the strategies, you know, we had a meeting with our, I met the streets guys this week, or the maintenance guys, that some of them work on streets. You know, we've got a good group of folks that do a lot of different things, and streets is just one of them. So what I've seen effective in other agencies, my time with the city of Santa Maria, is bringing folks into the conversation, doing routine meetings with the folks who are out in the field. So we'll be doing that regularly to address, you know, pavement needs and strategies. Also, I mentioned utility project coordination. If we know there's a big development going in somewhere, or the wharf project, or, you know, we're not gonna do a surface seal or any type of treatment on that road if we know that's coming. So let's be smart about how we coordinate with utility companies. Sometimes you can't, you just can't, you know, I don't know when SoCal Gas or anyone's going to do their projects, but maybe we can reach out to them and say, hey, do you have any major projects in town that we need to be aware of before we do pavement projects? Like I mentioned, updating your PCI, Street Saver, and treatment costs regularly. Every 2 years is enough. I think it's something we got to do annually, just so we know what we have. The data you put in the system is as good as it is. You know, you've heard the expression "garbage in, garbage out." We want to have accurate data, and that's the most current. Pavement preservation with critical point pavement management, which I already discussed. Funding, that's a big thing. I don't know the answer to that. I think it's something we got to continue to look at. If there's ways we can bring other funding sources, if there's grant funding, I mean, Measure Q is going to add quite a bit for us each year. It's a significant portion of that. Looking at other, whether it be an active transportation project, putting pavement as part of that, looking at more ways to restore our pavements as part of a bigger project. Innovation, different types of treatments, you know, rubberized chip seal, triple cape seals. TMO is a thin maintenance overlay. You know, it's one thing I'm familiar with. Full depth reclamation. You know, we'll look at every treatment available, see if it'll work. Regular standard updates. We're working on this now. I learned that city's looking at updating their standards, and with that is our roadway standard, our trench cut standard, making sure that when trenches are cut for utilities, that they're establishing the pavement correctly. And then lastly, development conditions. When we have a significant development, let's look at ways we can have the developer contribute to some of the pavement restoration. The utility cuts obviously don't help our situation, but maybe they can, you know, do that half of the roadway. These are things that, you know, are going to be a case-by-case basis, but it's certainly up for discussion. So any further questions? I know that was a lot of information. I appreciate your time and input, and there's my contact info. I'm always open to discuss pavement, because I love looking at at it and ways to improve it. So
is it Arid or Eric Day? How do you say your name?
Riddio, like radio. Eric Riddio on the radio. I do DJ at the radio station here. So
would you be willing to email your presentation to the board?
Certainly, yeah, I can definitely do that.
Thanks.
I had one more. Oh, go ahead.
Oh well, I don't have any more questions. I just wanted to thank Eric. I thought this was extremely useful and well thought through and informative. So thank you.
Thank you.
Totally agree. I had just one question. Just kind of jumping back to 41 for a second, and kind of like what you mentioned as far as the utility coordination type thing. So I know there's been talks of a possible roundabout. I know there's a lot of hoops to kind of jump through for that. But if there was a roundabout, would that section then go on hold so we don't, repave that area just to dig it all up and reconfigure it all? Or is that?
So that project, and I'm somewhat familiar with it, but I haven't got fully up to speed. It's really early in the even planning side. The roundabout is a potential improvement. They have, part of this exercise when it involves Caltrans, you got to look at the different alternatives and run models on it. So we're looking at the intersection control evaluations now. It isn't even in design yet. So that's probably several years out. And I think any pavement in this area really needs to be addressed now, even if it's a temporary fix, just so it doesn't, expand into other areas because it is such a high traveled intersection. So, as far as how the extents of the roundabout, it may be 20, 30 feet. I don't know, maybe more. I'm not sure the right of way and the geometry of it, but I think at this point we just don't know enough to really rule out. I think we really want to just take care of the pavement now, and it's probably quite a bit of time before we see that improvement actually.
I totally agree. I just know, like, for instance, like for my house personally, they did the chip seal in front of my house 5 years ago, right about during kind of the last one. And I think within 6 months we got a grant, the city to replace all the sidewalks. So then all the sidewalks came out, and so a new asphalt patch was basically stripped all the way along, kind of by City Hall. And, so now we all have like an 18 to 24 inch asphalt patch back, which happens 6 months after the chip seal. So, trying to kind of coordinate those things so that doesn't happen, I think is, smart. But I understand. I mean, maybe that'll go in 2 years, maybe it'll go in 10 or never. So,
yeah,
I understand.
No, I hear you. Definitely, we want to time our concrete projects or utility, we don't want to be putting the effort into restoring a road surface and then go back and cut it, 2 months later. It's just not good practice for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Eric. It was really, really great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Excellent. This was very good.
So,
Chair Rogers, we'll have to ask for public comment.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to do that. If there is any public comment, can anybody in the queue?
Thank you, Chair. Sorry about that. I was muted. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so then let's continue on to item C, which would be future agenda items. Any comments on that from the board? We have the EV charging stations on there.
Doug, this is Lori. So is there a proposal? I didn't see it in the packet.
We have an EV charger station item planned. We have a couple of grants that the city was awarded. And I won't go into detail about them now, but it's something we're interested in bringing to PWAB. I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and probably we could be doing a lot more.
Okay.
So that is certainly one item we'd like to bring next month.
Okay, great. Sounds really interesting. Thank you.
Well, of course, I'm very interested in at least replacing the five eucalyptus trees that have already been cut down. I'd love to see, there's three right near, right on Quintana near the traffic circle, and there's two on Morro Boulevard right off of Marina where the trees are gone. It'd be great to grind those stumps out and put in something else. So I definitely would like to talk about the, at least those five positions and maybe some other trees over the next few years.
Okay, that's something. I'm not sure if we can put something together for, or I'm not sure if you're looking just for those issues to be addressed or for that to be an item for PWAP. We do intend, and I'm being vague here because timing is everything, but we do intend to bring a tree replacement plan specifically for the Wharf project to PWAB and also to City Council this year. We don't have a timeline on that just yet. We believe that tree removals are mostly done, if not completely done. But we want to make sure that we have a clear idea of what our scope is going to be before we bring it up in front of a, you know, in a public meeting. So that's certainly something we can bring, Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else have other items that they'd like to see?
Yeah, this is Robert. And I've been walking around town a bit, noticing we still seem to have a lot of uneven sidewalk situations. I haven't been on the board long enough to have had this come up in a board meeting yet, but it'd be nice if we could once again revisit this subject for the benefit of new members and for Eric, actually, see where he stands.
Okay.
He stands on solid concrete, unbroken concrete, but I'll say that City Council did approve around $25,000, I think, in this fiscal year's budget to address some sidewalk issues. We're actually going to be building that in to the pavement management program that Eric mentioned, hopefully going out to bid sometime in April. So we are gonna have some sidewalk repairs as part of that bid, if that's still the plan, Eric.
Yeah, we're looking at the estimates and the overall budget, the pavement and concrete, to see how much we can actually do. It is a focus. Some of the hotspot areas, if there are others that come to mind, certainly send me an email and we'll take a look, see.
Does that include the wedge grinding effort to reduce the trip hazards?
No, that's separate. I think that's, I've talked to Matt. He does a regular, grinding program with Precision or some other vendor, but yeah, that would be separate. This would actually be areas that can't be grounded that really need to be replaced. So
well, and for me, like, you know, that kind of goes again of like, are there any other, maybe this is, you know, why we're talking, but maybe another sustainable thing to put into the sidewalk as far as like a permeable paver that's not going to lift anymore, you know, with the tree roots, and be able to be kind of put back as opposed to replacing or grinding in the future. Maybe it's something to kind of look into. I know a lot of other, you know, local municipalities have kind of turned to that. And, you know, Paso Robles is a big one, Tascadero, you know, where they're doing permeable pavers. Which kind of goes into, you know, what Laura said about into bioswales and things like that, where it's kind of doing two things at once. And it's, you know, something to maybe think about.
Well, I would just say that I think we have enough feedback here that we should likely plan on some sort of sidewalk presentation
I don't know if we can put that together in a month, given staff workload currently and just having a lot of new staff on board, getting up to speed on everything we do, not the least of which is the biggest project this city will ever work on, the WRF program. So, but that is certainly an interest of ours. It's something we've been talking about, and we'd be glad to share some information with PUAP at a later meeting about our plans for the sidewalks here.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would add that, I'm certainly open to looking at other materials. I know that I've seen some of these rubber, like flexible type surfaces that have had, you know, sometimes good results, sometimes bad. But looking at, I think even if we're going to, you know, future sidewalks or big areas like a project where we could look at something that's continuous. So I think definitely looking to, explore more and hear from you more on that.
Yeah, and it's certainly something we can't deliberate on tonight since it wasn't on the agenda, but we do appreciate that input for future meetings, and I think it's something we could bring back. And we can update the PWAB next meeting on what our timeline is for that.
Well, great. Well, thank you. Okay, well, speaking of the next meeting, we're nearing the end here tonight, and as you can see, the next meeting is going to be April 20th. And as Greg already said, I guess that'll be kind of a hybrid. We'll, I guess, meet at the Veterans Building and or have those people who participate via Zoom. I think that's what I heard you say.
That's correct.
Right? Okay, so I think we're basically ready to adjourn our meeting. Okay. Thank you all very much.
7:02.
Okay, good night.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you all. It's good seeing you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert.